I'm honored to introduce to you today an unusual woman. Sister Perry, often confused because her middle name is Cap, with Sister Ardith Cap, who spoke Sunday night. For the first nearly 40 years of her life, was her favorite pastime was athletics. She participated in sports of all kinds, coached a great softball pitcher, and the list goes on. She broke her ankle playing basketball and then began her career in writing music. It's interesting that someone has been that versatile in their life. Sister Janice Cap Perry has enriched our lives by her musical presentation of gospel themes. She has been writing music on church and secular themes now for nearly 15 years. Sister Perry was born in Ogden, Utah, and raised in Vail, Oregon. She received her musical training at Brigham Young University. A very versatile composer, she composed the hymn As Sisters in Zion for the hymn book and has 10 songs published in the primary songbook. She has written music for 7 sacred cantatas, 2 of which have been performed in the Salt Lake City Tabernacle by the Mormon Symphony and Chorus. 22 albums and songbooks have been produced with her original music. Brother Darwin Wolford, a composer in his own right and of our music faculty, said this: "Probably more songs sung by Janice Cap Perry are sung and recognized around the church, around the world by members of the church, than any other LDS composer. Her music is often published in the church magazines. She has worked with the general boards of the Relief Society, Young Women, and primary organizations in preparing music which brings to heart the messages of the gospel, as we just saw. Sister Perry is married to Douglas C. Perry. They are the parents of 5 children and have several foster children. She currently serves as the Relief Society president in her ward in Provo. We're honored to have with us Sister Janice Cap Perry.
It's nice to be with you this morning in Rexburg. It's a favorite place. I've been here twice for Women's Week years ago, and I love the spirit that I felt here. I want to thank Brother Howell for meeting my airplane this morning and talking to me and introducing me to the campus here, and to the Binions for the luncheon that they just hosted, which I enjoyed so much. I'm a little more comfortable at home in my studio writing music than I am in this position, but sometimes I have to come out of my comfort zone, so I still consider this an experience in overcoming the fear of men. I know you've had Sister Ardith Cap and Sister Deanna Edwards, 2 of my favorite ladies, speak to you this week, and I can only imagine what a wonderful experience that was. I want to speak to you from my heart today and hope you'll understand with your heart. A few years ago, my husband and I went to Argentina to pick up our youngest son from his mission. And my son and daughter-in-law were with us because we were doing some firesides. We attended church there, and my daughter-in-law, Joanne, and I went into Relief Society where we knew only Spanish would be spoken. And I said, I have always thought that if you really listened with your heart, you could understand whatever was said, whatever the language was. So I said, let's go in here, say a prayer that we'll be able to understand this lesson and see how we come out. We both listened. We both thought we knew what the lesson was about. Afterwards, I said, I'm sure it was on the blessings of temple marriage. She said, oh, dear, I thought it was on baptism. And we captured our son out in the hall and had him come look at the teacher's manual. And the subject was teaching your children to appreciate different cultures. I hope that's not how we come out today. I hope you will understand the things that I have in my heart. And if I feel especially brave, I may try to sing a song. We've had a lot of foster sons in our home. We had one from Argentina trying to learn English, and he was always looking for the right word. One day, about 3 years ago, Steve was encouraging me to, "Mom, go ahead and sing in your firesides. President Grant said imperfect singing with the Spirit can be okay." So I was practicing, deciding whether I had the courage to sing one little song in a fireside. This Argentine boy, who was always searching for the right word, said, "Mom, don't worry about singing in public. I feel sure when people hear you, they will be frightened." That was a little setback for my confidence. The time you're in your life, when I look back at my own life, is one of the most important times that you will ever have. I only went to college for 2 years, and that was at BYU, and I took every music class that I could get in those 2 years. I was never able to finish, but that laid the groundwork for one of the most enjoyable things in my life now. The other important thing was my choice of a marriage partner during that time. I think the time I was 18 and 19, I made the decisions that meant more to me eternally even than at any other time. I know this time is going to go fast, and I just think I have decided to share three short stories with you about making choices. If we run out of time, it will be two short stories. But there are three things, there are many things to make choices about, but I've just picked three. The first one, and it's very natural for me to choose this one, is the importance of the choice of music that we have. There is great power in our music, and I think I only came to realize the great power of music, importance of it, when I realized a few years ago that our Savior, Jesus Christ, and the prophet of our dispensation, Joseph Smith, each turned to music right at the end of their lives. I knew the prophet did, but I had not been aware that Christ asked his disciples to sing a hymn with him before he went to the Mount of Olives. He's our example in all things, and I like to think, because it's recorded in the gospel, he left that example for us of the power of music. In our own day, Elder Packer has said, "We can learn some spiritual things very quickly through music that otherwise might take us a very long time to learn." And that has been the case for me. I think back to advertisements I heard years ago when I was a child growing up. We didn't have TV at that time, date myself, but we did have radio. And I heard things set to music that are still in my mind, and this is 35 or 40 years later. Things such as "Brill Cream, a little dabble, do you?" Or "You wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent." Those are at least 35 years old. Or "Cream of wheat is so good to eat the wheat it every day." That was preceding "Let's Pretend" on the radio every Saturday morning. Well, I wish these things were not in my mind. I don't need them. But because they were set to music, they're still there. There is a reason that things are set to music. When you think of our day and our ads, "You deserve a break today," or "It's the real thing." I mean, these ads aren't spoken. How many ads are just spoken? There is almost always music there. How much more important that we set gospel and eternal things to music, so that they'll stay with us that way. Brother Moody, the church music committee, said if we play good music and good words, these will act as a tattoo on our consciousness, on our subconscious, and they'll always be there to help us. The first story I want to tell you briefly is on the misuse of music. Whenever God creates something good and beautiful for us, invariably Satan creates a counterfeit. I want to tell you about a young cousin of mine who was involved in the wrong kind of music. This was about 4 years ago. He listened so much to heavy metal music. He was very moody and rebellious, and his mother attributed this moodiness to his music. He didn't agree with her, but she felt strongly about it. He had an experience one night in this regard, and I think it must have been in answer to his mother's prayers. He was driving home. He had about an hour's drive to come home after he had let some friends off after a date. And he put some of his heavy metal music in, and he turned it up really loud and started home. And all of a sudden, he was overcome with a spirit of fear and even an evil feeling. So afraid that he just, later in telling his mother, he could hardly describe his fear or the terrible feeling he had. He wondered what caused it. He was about 17 years old. And he looked around quickly. He had his mother's car. He took his tape out. He looked to see what she had there. And there sitting on the tape, on the seat, was the church tape, Bounce Back. And he put it into his tape player in the car. And immediately that feeling left him. He traveled on a little ways, and he started feeling a little embarrassed about that whole situation. He took it out and put his tape back in and turned it up high again, and the same exact experience came to him. He was really afraid of the feeling, and he took it out and he put the other one in and left it there till he got home. He went in and talked to his mother, and these are his exact words as he ran in the house. "Mom, I have seen the light." And she said, "Great." You know, she didn't know what he was talking about. And he said, "I don't ever want to feel again what I felt tonight coming home." And he explained to her what had happened. And he kind of left the room a little embarrassed. And he said, "Where do you keep our other tapes?" And she, of course, was more than happy to supply them. He decided to try an experiment. His best friend was Eric, and he had the heavy metal collection of all time at his house. And he called up the next day and said, "Eric, don't even ask why, but try an experiment. Let me have your whole collection of tapes for 2 weeks, and you play the tapes that I'm going to bring you. And I just want to know how you're going to feel." He thought he was a little crazy, but he said he would do it. So they made the change, and Eric listened for 2 days. And he called John back and said, "I don't need 2 weeks." He says, "I know what you're trying to tell me." Those two boys together planned a stake fireside where they invited all of the kids in the stake who wanted to make any contributions to their bonfire. I think they were like Saul when they were converted. They had the courage to let their friends know they had been converted. And they had this fireside, and the boys made a complete change. They're both serving missions right now. John is back in Connecticut, and I'm not sure where his friend is. We each have the light of Christ. We know what is uplifting and good for us. And if we have any doubt, we can apply Moroni's promise. Anything that inviteth and enticeth to do good and love God and serve Him is of God. If we can apply that to our music, I think it can make a difference in our life. The second choice I'd like to talk about is the choice to love and serve others. Some of you may find yourself in a circumstance that I'm going to describe. Years ago, maybe 10 years ago, our son was just starting his senior year at Provo High School. He had been elected student body president. He was a very confident boy. Everything in his life seemed to go well. He was very popular. At the same time, in our ward was a boy his age who had been severely abused, who was the butt of all of the jokes at high school. He was obnoxious. He was loud. He was made fun of by everyone. Because we did take foster sons into our home, one night during a home evening, his father brought him to our doorstep and said, "Our home situation is intolerable. Would you please take him for 2 weeks?" We had to talk to our son, Rob. The only place he could be at our house was sharing a bedroom with him. And we said, "Are you willing to do this for a couple of weeks?" And he said, "Yeah, that'll be all right." Well, 2 weeks, well, first of all, that night we took Guy down to our son's bedroom to try and find pajamas for him. When he pulled off his shirt, he had iron burn scars on his back from years past. We had first met him in the hospital with two broken legs. He had been so severely abused. He only tried to survive at school. We found out his IQ was 165, and he was failing because he was only trying to survive. When weeks turned into months and a year, our son came to us and he said, "I can't take it anymore. I thought it was only going to be 2 weeks." He said, "People at school make fun of me. The guy is so loud in our room that I can't concentrate. I'm trying to prepare for my mission. I can't read my scriptures there. I can't pray. I can't have the Spirit with me anymore, with him in our home." Well, I would have said, "Fine, we have to find a new place for him. We can't ruin your last year of preparation for your mission." My husband said, "Would you try an experiment with me? For 2 weeks, would you serve him in every possible way? Would you offer him rides when he needs it? Would you give him your full attention when he talks to you? Would you give him some advice in a loving way? Would you be his friend, defend him at school?" He kind of hung his head down a little bit and said he guessed he would be willing to try it. We saw a big difference. Right before that happened, we came home one night and our son had him pinned up against the wall like this with a fist back like this. And we began to see a lot of changes. We saw a friendship. Guy, who always spoke so loud, was speaking softly. He was giving hugs to members of the family, very awkwardly, but he was doing it. After 2 weeks, Rob said nothing, so we didn't. After 3 weeks, we said, "What's happened? What's your decision?" And he said, "About what?" I think you understand my point. By serving someone, we learn to love them, and the problems can disappear. Rob said, "As soon as I started really listening to him, he spoke softly. As soon as I started defending him at school, a lot of other people thought he was okay too." And he said, "I've come to the knowledge that the Lord loves him every bit as much as he loves me, that he's of great worth to him, and that the fault was with me." He said, "Besides, I could live with any mission companion they would give me." I'd like to sing a song called "I Am of Infinite Worth." And you can think of it in terms of yourself, but maybe think of it also in terms of some of the people that you know here at school who could use a friend and who are of infinite worth to our Father in heaven. If you know this piece, I would be happy if you joined me on the last chorus. All I need to do is of worth. Remember, my Savior, what He did for me when He lived among men on this earth. Pain and unspeakable sorrow That's a lot better with help. The third story I want to tell you is something extremely close to my heart this particular year. That's the choice to live a morally correct life. About a year and a half ago, my mother, who was 81 years old, had started having symptoms where we knew she had some serious illness. She had all the tests, and my brothers and sister and I went with her to the doctor to get her diagnosis. She had been a widow for 21 years, and she was anxious for the next step of her life, but we still wondered how she would feel when she, at this very moment. As we sat with her in the doctor's office, and he gave her the diagnosis of bone cancer and said it would be a very painful kind of cancer and no prognosis for how long she would live, no prediction. We all looked to our mother to see how she would accept it. She sat back in her chair a minute, looked a little stunned, but she said, I have my ticket home, don't I? And for the next year, it was my privilege, because I lived so close to her, to be the one to take care of her. And as she went from crutches to walker and to wheelchair, and finally to bed, and finally my husband and I moved in with her to care for her, there was always peace. She looked forward to one great blessing she had, was that her brother, who was a patriarch, gave her a blessing at the beginning of this illness and said she would not be required to suffer pain. Two of the sons of that patriarch are on your faculty here, my cousins Larry and David Saunders. And Paul Cox is my cousin here too. But she didn't have pain, but she had from the cancer, she had a lot of problems along the way. But we had a lot of introspective moments. We talked and talked about everything that really matters. And for a time in my life, nothing mattered except eternal things and seeing my mother through this. I said, "Mother, I really know why you have peace, but tell me once again." And so late one night, she said, "I don't have any regrets." She said, I've made every choice. I lived a morally clean life. I married your father in the temple. I stayed home and took care of my family. And I took every church assignment that was given me. I've tried to serve." Oh, did she serve. After my father died, she served a full-time mission, a name extraction mission for many years. She had 10 pennies in her window that she had to move every day for an act of service. And this was up until the last 6 months of her life. I said, "How can you move 10 pennies every day? Even when I really try, I don't do 10 things for people, acts of service." She says, "Well, I count phone calls or cards of encouragement I write or things like that." Anyway, she said, "Go over to my dresser and get a little poem there that I wrote when I was your age." She said, "When I wrote it, old age seemed remote, but here I am already." I'm only going to quote to you two verses of that poem in the interest of time. It said, "There's a little old woman up there ahead who somehow resembles you. She has your eyes, your nose, your chin. The last line's left me. Anyway, she looks like you. Whether she loves or despises you is all up to you, I am told. You brought her gladness or sadness because she is you grown old." Now, she had written that for some young women in her ward. She said, "I can't believe how fast it went from 50 to 80, and I am that old woman." And she said, "I was talking to them about the fact that every choice they made along the way would make that older woman, that is them, have peace or unhappiness." I think she was telling me to be sure I made the right choices so that I was at her point of life that I could also feel that peace. I said, "Can I borrow your idea and write a song? It's so nice, and I think maybe the young women of the church would like it." And she said, "Will you pay me royalties?" And I said, "Mother, you're pretty close to the end. Where will I send them?" But, of course, she let me use her idea. Picture yourself, young ladies. Just close your eyes a minute. Picture yourself how you might look at 80. It seems very remote to you at your age. But it happens. And young men, picture yourself how you might look as a man of that age. Most of all, think in your mind, how will you feel at that age based on the decisions that you're making today? I'd like to sing the song that I wrote from my mother's idea. We recorded it in the studio just the day she died. And after she had passed away, we had a couple of hours there with her alone, and we played it. It was last May, and a very special time. It's called The Woman You'll Be Someday. I would just like to close speaking for 1 minute only of a young lady who was not able to grow old and become that old woman. And she's a friend of yours who was killed in an accident here about a month ago, Julie Bear. She was my close neighbor and her father was my bishop. I went to speak with him last Saturday and he was sitting alone in his living room and crying and thinking about her. And he said his peace only comes knowing that she was prepared and worthy for this part of her eternal progression. Many had come and told them stories of how Julie had helped them to be better people. The doctor who cared for her in the hospital said, though he was not LDS, he said when he was with her, he felt that he was in the presence of God. No one knows how long we have to prove ourselves. I want to testify to you that my peace comes when I keep his commandments. I testify that the right kind of music can help you keep his commandments. And that by living morally correct lives in tune with the Lord's commandments is the only real peace and happiness that there is in this life and in the life to come. And I leave my testimony of that with you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.